Lesson 6, therapy. Another major component in getting well and maintaining your wellness with your bipolar disorder is going to be therapy. There are numerous ways to attend therapy. There is individual therapy, there's group, there's virtual and real-time options. All can be beneficial. Just be sure that all your therapy sessions take place with a trained and or licensed mental health professional. Now, that's not to say that you can't have friends and mentors and other people that you do talk to. However, when it comes down to your therapy that goes along with your medications, be sure that it's a licensed therapist so that she and the doctor can get together and talk and find out what the best course of action is for you. So, just to give you a heads up, therapy can and will be some of the hardest work that you will ever do in staying well. I highly recommend therapy. Just don't go into it thinking that you're not going to change. It can be painful. It can bring up traumatic memories, and it can also trigger negative coping mechanisms. While in therapy, you must have a trust relationship with your therapist. You must be able to tell your therapist at any time when you are having negative thought processes, feeling suicidal, or just having flashbacks or anything along those lines, so that they can help you. Okay. If you're having a real emergency, you can reach out to a crisis hotline, and always 911, if it's really that bad. If you're really having that much of a triggering effect, you should be able to reach your crisis hotline also with whatever behavioral health institute you're using. So those are some of the bad sides of therapy. It will hurt and it will bring up painful memories. However, the upside to therapy done well is that you will be learning positive life-altering skills. You'll be putting shame aside. You'll have resolution and you can have forgiveness to yourself and others, which forgiving is really a gift to yourself. You can find your triggers and you can learn techniques to have and build tolerance regarding those triggers. Rethinking negative thought patterns, gaining self-esteem, gaining self-confidence, and empowerment over your diagnosis, which is kind of huge. Now, there's many different kinds of therapies that can be used, and depending on you and how it is that you wish to be treated, and you know what you can, your insurance, and there's all kinds of figurings into what you can do as far as therapy goes. However, there are basic therapies that are used universally, and I'm going to give you a rundown on a couple of them here so that you can have an idea as to what therapy might be all about. So there is CBT, which is cognitive behavioral therapy, which is shifting negative patterns. So what's going to happen when you go into CBT is that they're going to try to manage your symptoms, and that would be between therapy and medication, preventing relapse, preventing behaviors which can result in relapse. So it's kind of like, you know, a preemptive strike, and learning coping skills to help control emotions and stress. So your therapist is going to determine your major problems. And he or she is going to examine the way that you think and how your emotions go along with the way that you're thinking. And they're going to spot negative and or inaccurate thoughts, behaviors, and emotions. They're going to correct you on it. And they're going to help you change your reaction to personal issues. And that's cognitive behavioral therapy, shifting negative patterns. Then we have DBT, which is dialectical behavioral therapy. Now, DBT is teaching acceptance and promoting change. Now, the word dialectical, I always thought that it meant dual, like two things, and it does, but not like that. So what dialectical actually means is two things can be opposite and still coexist at the same time. Okay, so what that kind of means is you can be doing the best that you can, but you can still do better. All right. It's a little confusing. Now, the major components of DBT, dialectical behavioral therapy, are mindfulness. So you're in the moment awareness of where you are, who you are, what you're doing in the moment awareness. You learn the ability to tolerate distress, and you learn how to manage different situations without overreacting or underreacting, or anything that is not in a positive way to react to a situation. You're going to learn how to regulate your emotions, and you're going to develop healthy communication skills. So DBT encompasses four skills, of which they are mindfulness, in the moment awareness, where you are, who you are, what you're doing, what is happening, pinpoint it. You will learn the ability to tolerate distress, and you will learn different ways to handle situations without overreacting. You will learn the ability to regulate your emotions so that they don't override you, and you will also learn how to develop healthy communication skills. I did DBT, and I looked at it as like rewiring my brain and the way that I thought about everything. I highly recommend DBT if you are struggling. It is a lot of work, and it is not a quick therapy. It takes time. I think that I did DBT for 2 years solid. However, it was well worth everything that that came with it for me. Anyway, again, it's all personal. Okay, and then we have acceptance and commitment therapy, ACT. This is a form of talk therapy which uses mindfulness as one of its main tools. The main goal of ACT is to help you live a more productive, meaningful life by developing psychological flexibility, or basically the extent to which someone can cope with changes, as well as think about problems and tasks in new and creative ways. Okay, so mindfulness again. Mindfulness is key. Now we have interpersonal and social rhythm therapy, and the primary focus of this therapy is to stabilize the circadian rhythm of your body. Now it's used to help with mood improvement by working with and understanding your biological and social rhythms. So if you're on a weird schedule or something's happened that's thrown you off your schedule and you kind of need like, you know, maybe a quick little like, you know, get you, that might actually work to get you back on cycle. And then we have psychodynamic, which is the psychological interpretation of mental and emotional processes. This is based on traditional psychoanalysis, so like Freudian and Jungian and Gestalt. And it is used to help people gain insight into their lives and issues, and can also be used to evaluate patterns and behaviors. I think in modern day therapy, there is a kind of a cross collection of all of these used within therapy. In my opinion, anyway, they kind of cross reference each other and they overlap, and you know, there's some good points to this one that can be used in that one, and maybe this one part of this therapy isn't so effective, but this part of it is very effective. So, you know, when you go into therapy, like I said, it's very personal, and you just want to kind of play it by ear. But if you do not feel comfortable with your therapist and you do not feel comfortable in a group situation, be honest about it. You cannot be helped if people don't know. And sometimes going into a therapy where you are not being helped, and it's kind of like a torture, it's a different kind of trauma. And, you know, if you're already like attending therapy and have, you know, been diagnosed with bipolar and you're in this beginning stages of getting well, the last thing you need to do is traumatize yourself anymore. So if it doesn't feel right, ask to get it changed. Okay, advocate for yourself. Okay, and then there's a few other therapies that, you know, could be useful and that you may be doing without actually thinking of it as therapy. So there's family-focused therapy, which itself kind of, you know, makes sense. Art therapy and music therapy, which you may be doing on your own, even if you're just coloring in a coloring book, that's art therapy. There's narrative therapy, which is basically writing. Group psychoeducation, which isn't for everybody. I personally like group in certain situations, but it's not for everybody. So again, lesson 6, therapy. Lesson 7, nutrition. You are what you eat, mind, body, and soul. So we've all heard the phrase garbage in, garbage out. And when you start thinking about what you are feeding yourself, keep that in mind, and you may save yourself a lot of trouble in the end. So in stabilizing and maintaining your bipolar disorder diagnosis, it's important that you are aware of what you are consuming to feed yourself, mind, body, and soul. Each of these components remaining healthy is vital to your overall well-being. They all interconnect. Okay, so obviously the first one we're going to do is like body nutrition. what you put in your mouth and what you eat, ingest, is what you build your foundation of your body on. So if you're eating crap, you're going to have a crap body. You're not going to feel good, and you're going to be always a little bit tired and lagging, and you're just not going to be 100% if you're eating crap. So I found this interesting food facts about people with bipolar disorder, and these are 10 of the foods that can actually help you to maintain, manage, or actually negate your some depression or manic episodes. Okay, so whole grains, again, healthy eating, kind of goes without saying, good for mania. Omega-3 fatty acid lifts depression. Selenium-rich foods, which I want to say is spinach, and I meant to write down what it was, but there's seleniums in a lot of food, is a mood stabilizer. Turkey or anything else with tryptophan in it helps to make serotonin, and serotonin is a key component in lifting depression. Beans and legumes are high in magnesium, again, may reduce mania. Nuts, high in magnesium, and they also help to keep your cortisol level in check. So if like you are going into panic attacks or that fight or flight mode often, or just mood shifting up and down, and you know your body is just like having a hard time maintaining level chemical balance, cortisol is one that you don't really want to have surging through your body. So if you're feeling like a little panicked or whatever, and you can chew on some nuts and see if it will help to kind of calm you down a little bit and take some of that cortisol out. Probiotics help release calming chemicals. Chamomile always been known as like the sleepy time tea. Very good for like, you know, mellowing you out. Dark chocolate. We're not talking regular everyday chocolate that you get at the grocery store. We're talking good dark chocolate. Will lower your stress level. And saffron, which is a spice, and I'm not sure what actually, I think there used to be saffron tea, but saffron will help you with depression. Now, in general, if you're eating healthy, you're going to feel better anyway. So what healthy really means is like limit the amount of high fat food that you eat, fried food, processed meats, keep an eye on sugar. Beside the fact that a lot of times on your medication, diabetes is a huge concern. You do not want to give your body more sugar than it needs. Ask about grapefruit juice or read your medication labels. Grapefruit and grapefruit extract and byproducts are in a lot of stuff. And you would actually be kind of surprised once you start looking at it. But grapefruit will interact with a whole lot of medication for bipolar. So that is one to watch out for. It's in a lot of sodas. It's used in some really weird stuff. Because when I first started checking it out, I was like, oh my gosh, look at this. Grapefruit in bread? It was weird. So just be very mindful, again, what you put in, what you're interacting. But yeah, grapefruit is one of those that is very, very common. So it's an easy one to remember to ask about. And avoid supplements or tell your doctor what supplements you are taking so that there are no interactions. Okay, now for your mind, limit the social media that you're on. We all know like it's very addicting and it's a good way to keep up with people. And, you know, it provides access and instant connection to people. However, it can also raise your depression, and it can raise your anxiety. It will give you poor sleep, and it will give you low self-esteem, especially if you are comparing yourself to the kid that you went to school with who's doing this and this and this so much better than you, maybe, right? Because you don't really know, because social media isn't always true. So unhelpful social comparisons, especially if you're already in a depressed state of mind, is definitely something that, you know what, if you can limit it or avoid it, go ahead and do so. And also the bullying that can happen on social media. Those of us that already have, like, you know, are working on building our self-esteem, but are maybe not 100% self-esteem, you know, we don't need to have any extra negative self-talk around us. So if, you know, if taking a break from social media, not just Facebook, but all of them, can really help you, you know, and go spend some time outside if you're going to do that. So limit your social media. Be mindful of the triggers and like movies, books, YouTube, the news. You know what? If it's disturbing to you, you don't have to participate in it. You can turn away. Avoid negative situations and people. Maybe easier said than done. However, you also can limit it and you can have plans made as to what you will do if you come into a situation where you need to vacate ASAP because it is not good for you. Educate yourself about your diagnosis so that you're not in the dark about it. More education, the more empowering you can be about your own diagnosis, and the more honest you can be with yourself and your treatment team about what you need to have done. And taking a mental health day, it's okay. You know, it's okay to take a day away to rejuvenate, sleep, do nothing. Just have a day to yourself. It's okay. Now, to feed your soul, and the soul is kind of a weird thing. Like, a lot of people think it's your conscience, and maybe it is, but nobody really knows what it is. But your soul is your essence, your innermost, your true self. And what you need to do with your soul is to learn how to dismantle harmful lies about yourself and replace them with the truth. So it's kind of like soul repair. Take time to rest and do things that nourish your mind and spirit. For me, that's like walking my dog, nature, looking at birds, you know, read a book, create something. If you have really good friends and family that bring out the best in you, hanging out with them, meditating. I've started doing Tai Chi. You know, anything that is personal and intimate to you that feeds your own soul. And when you come out of it, and you might come out of it with a sense of awe and wonder, and that's what we're going for. So this was Lesson 7, Nutrition. You are what you eat, mind, body, and soul. Lesson 8, sleep, the frenemy. So as we know, sleep can and will be an issue from time to time. Sleep disturbances are a core symptom of bipolar disorder, and it can have a profound effect on your life. Yeah, it really can. However, having some education about it and knowing what you can possibly do to help it will make it easier for you. So here are a few descriptions of the most common sleep disturbances and how they can and will affect you if you happen to get them. We have insomnia. Insomnia is persistent sleep difficulties and falling asleep and staying asleep. Many cases of insomnia can be cured with changes you can make on your own, which are lifestyle, you know, food, bedtime routines, social activities, all that. Acute insomnia will last a few days or weeks, and chronic insomnia, sleep issues, last past the initial stressor, which I feel like I've had insomnia since I was born. So I don't know what my initial stressor was being born, but insomnia has been definitely a chronic issue for me. And it is a problem because not only like if you're manic and then you have insomnia on top of it, and so that's when you start to go a little cuckoo and like psychosis comes on. Insomnia can really, really mess with you. Definitely one that you're going to want to talk to your doctor about and have them give you something to help you sleep, because without sleep, the whole shebang is kind of messed up. Okay, so that's insomnia, chronic persistent difficulties in falling and staying asleep. And then we have delayed sleep phase syndrome, which is delayed sleep-wake phase. Sleep disorder, it's an internal sleep clock, your circadian rhythm sleep disorder. So your sleep pattern is delayed by 2 hours or more from a conventional sleep pattern. So if everybody is going to sleep at midnight, you're not falling asleep until 2. And everybody's waking up at 8 and you're not getting up until 10. So that's like in a perfect scenario on that. But as we all know, you know, nothing like this is perfect. Your sleep, you could be off by 4 hours. You could be off by, whatever it is. Your whole cycle can be upside down. You could sleep during the day and be up all night. which is the next one, which is a regular sleep-wake schedule. Sleeping without any real schedule, irregular sleep and wakefulness, which disrupts a normal sleep-wake schedule. So that's kind of what I'm talking about. Like, you sleep whenever, you wake up whenever, you don't have a schedule, there's no reason for a schedule, you have no routine. All dangerous when you have bipolar disorder. Might be, you know, fun for a while to just, like, wing it, but when it comes right down to it, you really need a schedule, and having a regular sleep schedule is definitely not going to help you. Nightmares and vivid dreams and night terrors are a bipolar special, apparently. So some experts actually believe that nightmares can predict upcoming mood shifts. So if you're keeping a dream journal and you're starting to have a lot of nightmares, you might want to let your doctor know ahead of time, and they may be able to proactively do something to help you before you get hit with an unexpected mood shift. And night terrors are also most often reported by people with a bipolar diagnosis. So that's one of those wonderful things that we seem to be able to get as being people with bipolar. But anybody that's had nightmares or night terrors, yeah, definitely know that they are no fun, and they will make you not want to sleep at all. So, yeah, another one to let your doctors know. There is medication specific for night terrors and nightmares. I don't know anything. I know very little about them. However, I do know that they exist. So if you are plagued with that type of sleep disturbance, let your doctor know. There is some relief for you. We have social rhythm disruption, which is a disturbance in social rhythms or routines, and it could promote a disruption in your circadian rhythm. So this is like, say, you have to work an extra shift or something at work. There's a storm, there's an unexpected something that happens, and your rhythm gets thrown off a little bit. That's a social rhythm disruption. It's something that is, you know, situational, comes and goes, but it does throw you off your schedule. And again, something as simple as just getting yourself back onto a normal wake-sleep routine could help with that. Now, the ways to really try to get your sleep in control is to have good sleep hygiene. And these sound easy to comply with. However, you know, as we know, sometimes complying is not the easiest part of having bipolar. So in order to have a more robust life and to be able to thrive with bipolar, good sleep hygiene include: you go to bed at the same time and you wake up at the same time every day. If you can't sleep, you still try. If you're already awake, you stay in bed until that time, and then you get your body adjusted to this wake and sleep. Try to avoid naps. Use your bedroom for sleep and for sexual activity only. Avoid heavy meals a few hours before bed. And once you go to bed, if you cannot sleep, get up and do something, but maintain that sleep-wake schedule. Get up, try to do something for 15 minutes, go back, lay back down. And if you can't sleep, get back up, go do something else. But get up at the time in the morning when the alarm goes off. It's the only way that you're going to train yourself to get on a schedule. Of course, therapy will help with sleep once you start to work through some of your repressed memories, or just, like, you know, guilt or shame, and you're starting to learn forgiveness and you're starting to get a grip on yourself and your diagnosis, your sleep will improve. And of course, there's always medication for that persistent and chronic sleep disturbance that is just not being taken care of yet with a regular healthy lifestyle and therapy. So this is lesson 8, Sleep the Frenemy.